We'll do some Washington predictions at 11. I want your top five Washington players. The top three are pretty easy, in my opinion. It's 4 and 5 where it gets difficult. But start thinking about your top five players on the team. We'll take calls on that during the 11 o'clock hour in about 20 minutes. Charch will join us at 11:25. We've got our NFC predictions coming up in the 11 a.m. hour. Michael Phillips today on the show. Dan Duggan from New York. He covers the Giants will join us. And we will give a pick on tonight's game, even though I don't love the game either way from a betting perspective. Joining us right now is Denton Day, my old producer and my good friend. Denton left me back in April, but left me in good hands with Max, who's been producing us. But Denton doing a great job on his new gig with BetMGM Network. And of course, Denton's a big part of SiriusXM's College Football Saturday, the host of College Football Overtime on SiriusXM College Radio. At the Denton Day on X on Twitter. Real quickly, before we do our first college football segment of the year together, give me your Washington 2025 predicted record.
First of all, I would say less, more dragged out of the 980 studios, but that's neither here nor there.
That's not true. You got a much better gig.
I would say I've been a little bit more optimistic. Everyone's been talking about, like, oh, they're going to take a step back, and oh, the teams are so tough. I don't really care. I got number five in my backfield, so I'm pretty good with that. I'm going to go optimistic. I think 12 wins is still what they're going to be able to accomplish this year. So I'm going to go 12-5.
You are right. I mean, I don't think everybody feels that way, but there's definitely, I think, a lean in the direction nationally of people saying that Washington got a little bit lucky last year, really good fortune, close games, 20-23 and fourth down, all of that stuff. And that, you know, it's only, you know, it's typical, which it is not typical, but everybody believes that this narrative that it's typical for a sophomore slump after a great rookie season at quarterback. But I don't see it that way either. I think you're much more in line with where I am going to be when I give my prediction tomorrow. All right, we're going to do college football with Denton every Thursday in this spot, looking back a little bit at the week before, but previewing the week ahead. Because the week ahead doesn't have, you know, blockbuster headline games here in week two, but week one did, just give me your overall takeaways from week one.
Defenses are really good across college football, which is not out of the ordinary, but I think because there's so many quarterbacks that were returning, and then of course you had Arch Manning, who came into this season with every single little bit of hype that you could possibly put on a guy that really hadn't played before, I think everyone expected to see some track meets. But my biggest takeaway from that first game with Texas and Ohio State was that Matt Patricia might actually be really good when it comes to being a coordinator in the college game. And on top of that, Ohio State can really tackle. Like, I thought the tackling this week was really, really strong, because usually in the first 3-4 weeks of the season, due to them not hitting a ton in practice, it feels like the tackling is more on the low end. But I thought across the country, the tackling from the good teams was really, really impressive. So defensively, that was a big standout week one.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because during the entire weekend, and I know you were dialed in on it like I was, you kept hearing, you know, everybody say defenses are ahead of offenses. And I don't know that there's data that suggests that the low-scoring games that we saw in week one were typical, because I don't remember them being typical. Because of what you said, tackling is usually a problem early in the season, and it is in the NFL as well, because they don't hit leading up to the first real games. What was your... Are you burying Arch Manning after the game he had at Ohio State, or are you giving him some breathing room here to, you know, get his feet under him, because that was a tough spot?
Yeah, I'm giving him breathing room. No, I was never like an Arch Manning as a savior kind of guy. You know this. I know this. The Heisman favorite in the preseason never wins the Heisman, so that's just always good to stay away from that. Because of that, I thought he'd be good. I never thought he was going to be great, and Texas was this unbeatable juggernaut. I think he just ran into Matt Patricia, honestly. I mean, this guy made a career from trying to confuse some of the game's best quarterbacks of all time. I think he's going to be able to confuse a 21-year-old that's only played four games. So I think this was just more bad timing, you know. As much as we, the viewers, hate the layup games are actually really good for teams because it gets them into some form of a rhythm offensively. So when they do end up playing competition that's at the same weight class as they are, they're much more apt to handle it. Whereas because he played a spring game, and I actually don't even know if Texas had a spring game, but he ran good practices against Texas, and that's really it. So when you see somebody else for the first time, you're naturally going to be a little bit flustered. I think he'll be fine. He'll bounce back. Just give him the layup games.
I was surprised with the way that Sarkisian called the game. I thought it was conservative. I thought he showed a lack of trust in his quarterback in that atmosphere against that defense. And I was surprised by that. Were you?
I was. That was maybe the biggest takeaway from the Texas side, was that I thought that Sark was going to be able to go kind of punch for punch with Matt Patricia. And it felt like that Matt Patricia got one punch in, and then Sark kind of, you know, Mike Tyson, you have a plan to get punched in the face. He lost his plan. And then Patricia was just walloping him for the rest of the game. And, you know, they started to unleash Arch a little bit in terms of, you know, getting the ball down the field, vertical throws in the fourth quarter. But you can't just do swing passes and expect that your guys are going to be able to get out in space and make guys miss. They just weren't. Ohio State, again, it goes back to the tackling. They were so good at tackling, you should have known in the first quarter, hey, this is not going to work. We need to push the ball down the field, and it felt like they got to that way too late.
All right, before we get to that, you know, game on Saturday night between LSU and Clemson, what did you think of Gus Malzahn's offense at Florida State?
Boy, that guy hates Alabama with a passion, and I envy that. I mean, that is true hatred to where he is. I think Gus is a good coach. I've never thought of him as a great coach, but when he plays Alabama, you get the absolute best of Gus Malzahn. I thought they looked really, really good. I was just more concerned with how Alabama looked because we had not heard anything that would suggest that they weren't performing at a high standard in the offseason, and to see them basically get bullied for an hour against Florida State was not what I had. That was the only game I lost this week, Kevin. I went like 6-1 week one. That was the only one that I lost because Alabama just did not have it.
You and I didn't talk about Tommy Castellanos. I loved him at BC. I didn't really know until maybe a week or two before that Florida State is where he landed. I thought he really was a dangerous quarterback at Boston College. I think he looks the part. Like, to me, Florida State, what I saw is sustainable. What do you think?
I do too. The talent is certainly there. It's going to be a personality thing because he has he is confident. You know, he's very confident. That's why he's not there at Boston College. He has a little bit of a mouth on him. Now, we've seen like Diego Pavia has a little bit of a mouth on him, and it really worked in his favor. There's a level of swagger that, not to compare Castellanos to, you know, Texas A&M Johnny Manziel, but there was a level of swagger that Manziel had. So he certainly carries himself. It's very similar to those guys. It's just going to be about, can Florida State put up with that? Are they welcoming to that? And if they are, like, this team has an identity that they certainly did not have in 2024. I do think it's sustainable as long as everybody's kind of okay with their quarterback. He's going to start cashing some checks that maybe the defense is going to have to be able to, or writing some checks that the defense is going to be able to have to cash.
Could Kalen DeBoer actually lose his job in season?
Highly unlikely. That buyout is going to be crazy.
And what is the buyout?
Just a lump. It's something like $60 million, but it's less of a lump sum, which maybe makes that a little bit easier. But then, do you really want to be on the hook for years to come? Because I think the way his is set up is kind of similar to how the Nationals like to set up their contracts, whereas it's less lump sum and more just you're going to be paying me for a while. So do you really want to get in a position where you're having to pay Kalen DeBoer for potentially 8 years down the line when he isn't coaching anymore?
Well, you would agree, though, if they don't make the playoff, he's done.
Yeah, he's in trouble. You can't miss the playoffs 2 years in a row, especially in a 12-team playoff. In a 4-team playoff, that could be a little bit more acceptable because you play in the SEC and you basically had to go undefeated or at the very least have one loss. But in a 12-team playoff, you have to be able to make the college football playoff if you're Alabama. That's a that has to happen.
All right, we'll talk about Saturday's card here in a moment. But just real quickly, just quick takeaways from LSU, Clemson, Miami, Notre Dame. We'll pass on Carolina, TCU.
I was so stunned with Clemson's inability to produce on offense. I've been so bought in on them this entire year, and in the second half, they got dominated. Now, LSU didn't put up a lot of points, but Clemson was completely stonewalled. If the LSU defense is what they had, this defense is what they had when Jaden won the Heisman, they go undefeated, and they have an average margin of victory of, 20 points. Yeah. I mean, they're so good. They're like, this is the defense that they have been asking for years. Clemson had no chance against them. I thought Cade Klubnik would step up. He did not. I thought these receivers that I had preached about and that I'd heard so many good things about this offseason would step up. They did not, and they have no run game. Like, Clemson just could not run the football. That LSU defense was incredibly impressive, and it's another year of, after week number one, questioning if Cade Klubnik is legitimately a guy that'll have success, not just in college, but if he'll make that transition to the NFL.
Well, you know, I don't see it with him. I think he just doesn't process. I don't think he sees it. On the other side, I think Nussmeier definitely sees it. He's just not very athletic. What'd you think of my boy Carson Beck on Sunday night? Looked pretty good. He can, you know what? He really can throw the football. He can make every throw.
He is much more of a game manager. Almost feels like a derogatory term when you're talking about quarterbacks. I don't think that it is. He cannot do what Jaden did, which is, play Superman and lift the team. You need to have a running game with him, and Georgia did not last year. Miami does. So if you take that pressure off of Carson Beck and you just say, hey, read the field and make the right decision, he can definitely do that. And he showed that against Notre Dame. That was very impressive. I was on Miami, as you know. You and I texted back and forth about that one because the world was on Notre Dame, so I was definitely on Miami. I didn't anticipate he was going to play that well, though, so I was really, really impressed with what he was able to do. And honestly, if you're Notre Dame, you're kind of like, all right, we did not expect this first loss. They got Texas A&M coming up here in 2 weeks. I'm not saying they're in trouble necessarily, but they are going to need to beat Texas A&M if they want to get into the college football playoff.
Yeah, they were there and did it last year after their loss at home to Northern Illinois. It was a different loss, obviously, on Sunday night at Miami. All right, let's look ahead. Real quickly, what did you think of Malik Washington at Maryland? And do you think that the Terps could maybe surprise? I mean, that's not an opponent, and they don't have an opponent until week four, but what were your early impressions on him?
He looked good. He can certainly deliver the football. You know, I try and stay away from massive week one hot takes. Or massive week one opinions, especially when you're not really playing anybody, but he looked confident. And I think you have to be a little bit excited if you're Maryland, because you haven't really had a guy that can really sling it the way that he can and play that confidently. I mean, Talia certainly had, elements of that. But I think once you start to see opponents, if it's even remotely close to what it was on Saturday, you'll start to feel really, really confident that maybe Locks did get his guy.
Not a great week two after all of the anticipation for the games week one, but what stands out to you?
I mean, obviously the nightcap, the main event, Oklahoma-Michigan, is the one that really stands out. But I do think there are some games in the 12 o'clock hour that are, at the very least, enticing. You know, maybe it's not the sexiest. I don't know if you love offense, probably not that interested in Iowa-Iowa State. But I happen to enjoy that rivalry, and I love a good 20-19 game, which is probably what that'll end up being.
Yeah, it's going to be 13-10. Although Iowa's got a much better quarterback situation than they've had in recent years.
They do, but Iowa's where quarterbacks go to die, because the guy wasn't exactly impressive against a nobody in week number one. I think that Baylor-SMU game is one that I'm going to be really intrigued with. You know, that's a short line. SMU is at home, only laying 2.5. Where Baylor, I thought Baylor was going to get the better of Auburn last week. They did not. Maybe I go back to the well with them. So that game is, at the very least, kind of intriguing. And then Kansas and Missouri is the one that I'm going to be paying the most attention to. You know, right now, you can get Jalen Daniels 50-1 to win the Heisman through the first
That's
2 weeks
Jalen
of the season.
Daniels, everybody, not Jaden. Jalen Daniels is a really exciting quarterback at Kansas.
You can get him 50-1 right now. And the first 2 weeks, again, not playing anybody, but he's looked really impressive, so I'm excited to see what he gets to do against an opponent that's not great by any stretch of the imagination, but at the very least, they have, power for talent.
Rivalry
talent.
Game. This is a so big rivalry it. Game.
Yeah, and Kansas right now is a 6.5-point dog, so I do think they keep it close if Jalen Daniels can play well.
I'll tell you, the sneaky upset in the 12 o'clock hours, Illinois at Duke, they're just a 3.5-point favorite. So
yeah.
I can tell you, I will definitely have Duke early on Saturday. I don't really know what Illinois is. I've been thinking, and you and I have talked about this, I've been thinking that Brett Bielema would get it done and would build a powerhouse in the Big Ten at Illinois. Whereas, you know, in the SEC, you know, the way his style of football didn't necessarily match that league back in the Big Ten. And Illinois is ranked 11th or 12th in the country. There are big things expected. But this game early at Duke is a tricky one for them.
Yeah, that was a line that I was a little surprised with. And that's one of those ones where the flag immediately comes up and you're like, all right, there's something going on here. And I think because, you know, the average is going to see a ranked team going on the road to Duke is a very, very short line. Everyone's going to be all over Illinois, but that's one that you got to pay attention to. And I think I'm going to be with you on Duke.
If DeBoer gets fired, who would the front runner be for the Alabama job?
Probably Saban. I know he says he doesn't want to coach again, but like, you don't really have other options right now. It's not like there's some sexy, you know, up and coming hire that's waiting in the wings. That's kind of what Kalen DeBoer was supposed to be, and he hasn't really amounted to that, at least as of this point. Now, it's still early. You know, if they go on, because they have Georgia, LSU, and Oklahoma this year towards the end of the year, if he makes it to that point and they start winning those games, people will forget about the Florida State loss. But there's not really a lot of better options right now than Kalen DeBoer, unless you like really love maybe like a Lance Leipold at Kansas. But look, if you're going to hire the guy from Washington,
Lincoln Riley.
Oh, my God. If you're going to fire DeBoer for Lincoln Riley, jump off the bandwagon. Like, at that point, just hand Saban a blank check and get on your hands.
What about Mark Stoops?
I don't think they're all that intrigued. If Mark Stoops was basically stonewalled at Texas A&M, I don't think Bama fans are going to be happy with him. That's what I'm saying. Like,
Kyle
really
Whittingham
no
ever leave Utah?
Yeah, but he's 65. Do you want to hire a 65-year-old?
I think he's one of the top three or four coaches in the country, and it has been that forever.
I do, too. But remember, he already put his retirement plan in place at Utah. So I don't know how much longer he wants to do it at this level. And I think at Utah, you can get away with maybe not that he doesn't recruit, but you know, there's some lapses at times. It's a different ballgame if you're going into the SEC. That's the fear is, yeah, Kalen DeBoer might not be the best, but there's not a lot of better options right now if you're Alabama.
I mean, they have Georgia on the road. They have to play, obviously, LSU in November. I'm sure we're shooting him way too early, but God, to have that kind of a loss where really it was not competitive after that opening drive. And I thought Ty Simpson actually looked pretty good at times. He's a better thrower of the football than Milroe, but they got to be in the playoff. Period.
Yeah, they had. He was just lost at times. Like that first drive was great because, as we know, the first drive is scripted. When it came to like the game flow things and like, hey, you just have to go out there and steal some things.
They couldn't block anybody.
They couldn't block, and he was lost a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean they completely shut down the run after that opening drive, and they got after him big time. It was kind of fun to watch, and I'll tell you what, you know, there were some really good crowds on Saturday. I don't think there was anything that popped through the TV screen more than Doak Campbell. By the way, a pared-down Doak Campbell after the renovations. It was loud.
It was loud.
So it'd be kind of cool to see them be relevant this year.
Yeah.
After what happened 2 years ago. Thanks. We're going to do this every week. Looking forward to it.
Yep. See ya.
Denton, everybody, every Thursday at 10:35, talking college football. All right, up next, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I want your top five players on the team. The top three are easy. One's easy. Two and three could go either way. It's where you get to four and five that I think there will be a lot of interesting answers. 301-230-0980. Put down your top five Washington players entering 2025. I'll have mine. Max will have his. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. You can watch us on the Team 980 YouTube page. Hit the like button and the subscribe button when you get there.